You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is the great Matt Moore of Action Network, of Locked On NBA, of Locked On Nuggets. And as usual, we are doing a tiers podcast, and this one was one of my favorites. It is on alignment. I'm going to let Matt explain what he meant by that, and I thought it led to a fascinating conversation. This podcast is brought to you by betonline.ag. Use the CLNS50 promo code to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Episode runs well over an hour 20, longer than tiers podcasts usually are because we have a lot of discussions, a lot of disagreements, a lot of really interesting thoughts in this episode, as is often the case with Matt, but especially in this one. I hope you really enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I always love doing it.
I, for a second, thought we would have maybe there are a lot of options for criteria coming out of the All-Star break. And I really love what you put together because it kind of forced me to think about these teams, especially the ones that were more recently constructed in a different way. Do you want to walk people through the idea?
Yeah, so we try and do something different on all these. We'll probably next one, we'll get back to like the roots of like, hey, who are the best teams? For this one, we're going to do best alignment. And so what that means is everybody pulling in the same direction. You're on the same page. There's a play style that fits the skill sets. There's buy-in from all the players. They've got the capability to do what they want to do. There's no huge trade-offs in terms of like, well, you can do what you want to do, but the result is that you can't score or you can't defend either one. And so the idea is like, because I've been thinking a lot about this from perspective of you can have the most talented team in the world, say with like, I don't know, let's just take like a 7-foot forward that shoots 50, 40, 90 from the field and is a Hall of Famer and like an incredible, incredibly skilled point guard that just with a dazzling array of moves. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have everybody bought in, if you don't have everybody on the same page, if you don't have everybody pulling in the same direction, you're going to have some trouble. And from that perspective, it's not just those types of situations, but from which teams are like everybody's going in the same direction, everybody knows what they're going to do, and everybody's happy with their situation, and the play style fits what they need to do. Who are the how do you rank those teams? And that's where we are for best alignment tiers this week.
The other thing I'll add in there that I considered, and I think this is within the realms of it, is the compatibility of talent. So, yeah. For example, if you have a team where you have, especially in some ways for me with star players, I eventually have a tier that kind of differentiates this. But it's like, if you have two dominant players, and whether it's on offense or on defense, you kind of can't do one thing or you can't do another thing. You know, like those sorts of issues are a really big problem. Or you can do certain things, like your star goes in one direction, but then you don't have the right complementary pieces. You know, the idea that, as you said, like everyone pulling in the same direction. Like, I think that there are times when that becomes a really important differentiator. There'll be a team that I think will surprise some people that is way further down on my list for this exact reason.
Yeah, do we want to start at the top for best aligned, or do we want to start at the bottom for least aligned?
I will give you the choice. I actually think there's more to discuss towards the bottom, so maybe we'll start there. We very rarely do that, but I think we can.
Yeah, let's start at the bottom. So I have five tiers. Fifth tier is five teams, and it's the Houston Rockets, the Atlanta Hawks, the Washington Wizards, the Toronto Raptors, and the Los Angeles Lakers. Those are the five teams that I chose for worst alignment in the league as we stand right now. And we have, like, I love this because we have an array. We have the Rockets, who are one of the worst teams in the league. We have the Hawks, who are right in the middle. We have the Wizards, who are right below the middle. We have the Raptors, who are between the bottom and the middle. And we have the Lakers, who are a little bit worse than the middle. So, like, it's a these teams, it's indicative of, hey, you can, there's a lot of talent here. Like, LeBron James is in this tier, and Pascal Siakam and Bradley Beal and Trae Young and all the talent on the Hawks team. And, you know, well, the Rockets have some guys. And so, like, there's all these kind of different teams, but those are the five that I started with, Houston being the first name that easily went into this, where the coach is not a good fit for the roster. Steven Silas would work better with an older, more veteran team, I think. I don't even necessarily think that Steven Silas is just a bad coach. I think he's a bad fit for a team that doesn't know what it's doing. Their best player is Alperen Şengün, but their franchise cornerstone is a Chuck first point guard that doesn't have a great feel for how to get teammates involved or shot selection. The rest of the roster is either undersized or badly fit. They don't have a good backup point guard. They don't have veterans to kind of guide the young guys and keep them in check. Like, this organization is, to me, is as far from contention. They are further from contention than any other team in the league, and it's by a little bit of a gap, even with how bad the Spurs are record-wise.
I have a separate tier. I have six, and it's my tier five of, like, I called it too much unknown and unsettled, because it's just basically like there's a lot that they have to work out, but they have the, like, they're not set now. So, like, for me, it was a bigger deal to have teams. I think the Rockets are a fantastic example of it, where it's just like, to me, it's the importance of alignment. And so the idea is basically like, if you're a really good team and you have expectations and you're not super aligned, that to me is a bigger problem. But you're wholly right on the Rockets. And I think what makes the Rockets different from a team like the Thunder or the Magic is that it's harder to see how these Rockets fit together, even if you add the other pieces around them, where, like, yeah, they have these, they have these talent deficits. Like, the Rockets are not as good a team as many of their brethren, but there are some of them where it's like, okay, you add a lead guard, or you add a wing defender, or you add a rim protector, and all of the other things slide into place. Like, that is something that happens. It's one of the more fun parts of the process, or you just add a bunch of talent and those things don't matter as much. And for Houston, the big concern is not like where San Antonio is, where it's like, well, we just need to add talent. It's, oh, we have some, but they don't make sense together.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be buy-in. Like, I don't know what everybody, I don't know what everybody's agenda is. I don't know what everybody wants. And it doesn't seem like Silas seems very much like resigned to what's going on and just like, okay, this is how it goes. Like, I came here to coach James Harden and kind of a refit around the team, and instead, this is what I got. All right, I know how this ends. And I don't necessarily blame him for that. You know, I think the front office has prioritized asset management, which is good, but they haven't gone far enough. Like, they haven't necessarily drawn out. I think that they haven't done things like at the deadline being like, hey, we can run out our cap space for you. Like, the Pistons at the draft last year is a good example of this, where Detroit was just like, hey, if you want to offload some salary, we're here for you. And Houston's never really done that. And
when they haven't really done any arbitrage in any form. Mm-hmm, like, you know, right? they kept Eric Gordon for a long time, and then they got, I would say, they upgraded in the first round, I guess. It's just kind of a different sort of return for him. They haven't, as you said, they haven't really rented cap space too much.
Is Kenyon, and this goes to, like, the organizational stuff, it's not just about how the team operates, where it's like, you know, is keeping Jayshon Tate and Kenyon Martin Jr., are those two things in line with, you know, you keep those guys if you're like, well, we really like them and we think we can be good with them. You are so far away from good. Like, would you gain more from trading those guys for assets? Or for, like, being like, no, they're going to be part of our core when we're good here next year. And it's like, you guys are too far away. So I think there's a little bit, like, it's a combination of talent, coaching, delusion. And like you said, like, the fit around these guys, you know, taking a chance on Kevin Porter Jr. was one thing. But going into the season, they should have recognized, like, oh, no. Like, we need to get, like, some sort of table setter, floor general, somebody to just, like, stabilize this unit and help these guys kind of run stuff rather than being like, no, we got KPJ and Jalen and that's our team. Like, it's just, it's a mess.
It's going to be very hard to fix unless there's massive internal improvement, because I mean, or unless they get somebody in the draft who then is good quickly, which is always hard to do. So I'm going to throw my bottom tier, my tier six, I called it fundamental incongruities. And there are a lot of different ways that a team can end up here. Okay. But the two basic ones are either sometimes your talent makes sense, but where your talent, like, but that doesn't make sense with the overall arc. So that's teams like the Wizards and the Blazers, who things mostly make sense, but they're not good enough for them to make sense. So like that part of it's like the Blazers. Yeah, I mean, especially when Lillard's on the floor, like a lot of this stuff works. But they're not, A, they're not good enough in the non-Dame minutes. B, they're not actually good enough in the Lillard minutes to survive everything else. And so it's like, well, then what are you doing here? And like the Wizards are in that same boat. Like they're, you know, they haven't really had Kuzma, Porzingis, and Beal. Like there've been some weird snake bit sessions with all those guys. But even when they're healthy, even when they're good, they're just not good enough. And so you have that group for me. And I'm kind of thinking about the Raptors here. That might not be completely fair. But the half-court offense concern, like, that's not going away. And I wish Scotty Barnes has taken strides since where he started this year. Still not solving those problems. Siakam hasn't solved them either.
Yeah, for me, a lot of the Raptors is I don't feel like there's any aligned push here. I don't feel like they're all – which is funny because – you know, we do this a year ago, then I probably have them tier two, where I'm like, oh, yeah, they're really, you know, everybody's doing the right things. They just are missing some pieces. And that's what's kind of makes things not fit as well as they could. Like they need a center or whatever. You know, 2 years ago, I'm like, oh, no, they're tier one. Like everybody's locked in. Great coaching. Everybody knows what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. And now I'm like, look, everybody's got their own agenda. And that's been obvious this year. Like Raptors fans and podcasters have talked about this all year long. Like, OG wants to be like the guy, doesn't want to be the third fiddle, and Fred VanVleet wants to get paid, and you know Pascal Siakam is there just trying to be like, hey, I just, you know, would really like to, you know, win some games here because he's like the cornerstone, and Scotty Barnes like had such a bad attitude that Masai had to have like basically an intervention with him early on in the season, and then you got Nurse, who very clearly has clashed with the players. Very clearly there's started to be like a little bit of aware on whether or not like there are real questions about whether Nick Nurse is going to be retained, which again, 2 years ago, that would have sounded crazy. And then on the other hand, you've got all this reality of what everybody in the league knows as far as like where this team is and how good they can be, and like which is not very good, and all of their different agendas. And then you have a front office that's like, no, we're going for it. Going for the play. And it's like, what do you guys do? What, I understand you couldn't get all of the firstborn children and the secondborn children in the trades, but like maybe you should have made some sort of shake it up move. I'm not saying trades for the sake of trades, but when I look at the Raptors, even they're on a two-game winning streak, barely got by the Pistons, Magic hung with them for a while, had a lead actually at the half. Like, they are so, to me, they just seem like a team that is going in so many different directions that it's hard to pinpoint where they're headed and how they're possibly going to get there when they're trying to go in so many different directions at once.
There's also the challenge of, I mean, I like Jakob Poeltl. I think that Poeltl has helped in some very specific ways, but I don't love the Poeltl-Scotty Barnes fit. Like, there's some challenges there. And it's also the question of how do you get from where they are to where they want to go? Like you brought up, and that ties in with alignment too. And it's just like, well, no, they need a bunch of things, and they've made those sorts of game-changing trades before, but they're extremely hard to execute, and most of the players who would solve some of what the Raptors do aren't available. And of course you can't do it in season.
What's your bottom tier? Give me your bottom tier right now.
Okay, so now I'm going to do the other three teams, which two of them are juicier. One of them is not. The less juicy one that we haven't discussed is the Pistons, and this for me is mostly about spacing. They've committed so much to non-shooting centers, and I think that makes life harder on Cade and Jaden Ivey. So like, there's some stuff there. Then you have, and I mean, I like Alec Burks and Bojan, but they're just probably not a fit for the long game with all the rest of these dudes. Then you have the two teams that I think are juicier, which is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow.
And in both of these cases, it's not about necessarily the offense. Like, I mean, in both, I believe in it, but for the Sixers, it's the defensive theory. It's that Joel Embiid can't run every scheme. He's very good at what he does. He can't run everything. And James Harden can't do the things that Embiid, like he can't run in a drop very well, and Embiid can. Maxey's also weird in that. And then the Mavs, I was watching that super fun Mavs-Kings game, and I was just like, how are they going to defend anyone good? They can defend bad teams. Sure. Anyone can do that. Sure. And I'm just, so for both of them, it's like they're the closest to moving out of this tier, and they're also the closest to moving like three tiers up. Because I believe in their talent. I just don't believe in how their talent works against high-level opposition.
I love how much disagreement we have. It's great. So I have Sixers. I have Sixers and Mavericks, both tier three.
Yes!
Based off of the idea of there's a little bit of incongruency with what you talked about on the defensive end. There's a little bit of incongruency with, like, hey, if you're going to do these things, you need a backup center that you can actually play in the playoffs and that Doc will actually play in the playoffs.
Oh, that would be ideal.
And you don't have that. And then you got just kind of the idea of, I think on top of this is, it's hard for me to be like, everybody's pulling the same direction. That's why James Harden has let everyone know that he's probably going back to Houston this summer. Like, the level to which that's out there is, even if it's just a leverage play, is disturbing, because guys in the locker room know that. And if Harden's just not there, if Harden's just not like locked in, the other guys are going to know that, and that's going to have ripple down effects. You're right on the defensive end. I think offensively the principles are pretty solid. I think that they're, they are very much like going to hit you with a hammer, like very steady over and over and over again. It's interesting because some of the teams that I think definitely deserve to be lower, where do you have the Wizards?
Oh, I have the Wizards in this tier.
Okay. So like the Wizards to me are another great example of like what this tier really embodies.
Yes.
Of like when I watched the Wizards, I saw them in person a couple months ago, and it shows up on TV every single time. It is not that the Wizards don't have talent. I think the Wizards have like pretty good players, like Bradley Beal, Monte Morris, Kristaps Porzingis has played great this season. They had Rui Hachimura. Denny's actually played really well. They have all these guys. Corey Kispert, like they have guys. It's that everybody on that team knows this team's not going anywhere, and everybody on this team knows that they're just getting a paycheck, and everybody on this team just knows that like, well, eventually Brad's going to ask out, and then I'll probably go somewhere else. But I'm going to get the money while I'm here. Like, I guess we're here. Like, there's no, like, identity to the Wizards. There's no, like, this is who we are. They're not, and sometimes that's as simple as, like, we're Nikola Jokic's team, or we're LeBron's team, or just, like, star player. Like, we're Dame, the Blazers. It's like, what's your identity? We're Dame's team, right? They don't even have that, because Beal is so often out. So, like, the Wizards, to me, I think are the most egregious example of the roster doesn't make sense in terms of maximizing what everybody does. The coaching doesn't make sense from maximizing the talent that it has. There doesn't seem to be much buy-in from the players. Like, Kuzma would have been perfectly happy getting traded back to the Lakers sometime this year. It was widely known in league circles that Monte Morris was like was hoping that they would get moved. Like nobody there is like, ooh, I'm in. Like, I want to be here. Washington's where I want to be, except for Bradley Beal, to the extent that he wants to get paid as much as he possibly can. But even he probably is going to get out. So yeah, I think it's a mess. Where do you have the Los Angeles Lakers?
I actually have them higher, and ooh, mostly that's because I think the fit of LeBron and Anthony Davis is so good.
Okay.
And so like I give a lot of latitude when you have two really good players and those players make sense together. And yep, so that, there are a lot of other things that drive me crazy about the Lakers, but I'm willing to give a lot of latitude. So I actually have them tier three, but I understand like, and also I would have had them, I probably would have even though they fit that structure, I probably would have had them down further before the deadline. And even though every piece of it wasn't perfect, I like Vanderbilt there. I like Beasley there. Russell will add a significant amount of talent. Like I don't love D'Angelo Russell in a LeBron system, especially with like what he takes away defensively. But he's a very good basketball player, and he's a better basketball player than the guys they sent out. So
yeah, and like here's what's interesting is the Lakers, and maybe I mean move the Lakers up because they do make sense from a roster perspective after the trades. To me, like one of the reasons they put them at the bottom was simply like, so I don't know, like, it's entirely possible that LeBron's, like, really struggling with this injury. Like, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Guy's been, a beast in terms of how many games he's played in his career, obviously, as the all-time scoring leader. I just thought it was really weird that he plays 40 minutes, he plays 43 minutes, he plays 33 minutes. He goes long in that Thunder game, he gets the record, they make all these trades that he's been wanting forever, he hasn't played. And like the disconnect between him and the front office has been so evident for so long. And I don't even know, like I thought it was notable that there wasn't a "we got a squad now" tweet, comment, report like there was after how he was excited in 2018.
That's a great point. And also the weirdness that he looked off after he broke the record physically. Like, he looked off physically in that OKC game after he broke the record. And like, and I guess you don't necessarily want to change how you handle the deadline. And is it possible that LeBron, like, that he knew things were worse than he conveyed to the medical staff? It's possible. I'm not going to say that happened. I obviously have no particular insight into it. But there is that element. And from his perspective, it's like you want to make the team better, even if you might have to take a little bit of time off, because that's what LeBron, that's what's better for LeBron James, both now and moving forward. And maybe as the Lakers, you still make those moves anyway, assuming you're going to retain D'Angelo Russell. So yeah, and there's also the weirdness with the Lakers of, like, you have this unbelievable talent. I mean, LeBron, he had a slow start of the year, but he has been a very good player overall. And then you have, like, they at least started the season with a bunch of players that, didn't necessarily fit that vision. So, I mean, I think they're poorly run overall, but I wasn't willing to ding too hard for that.
Interesting.
Anyone else in the bottom here before we move on?
Hawks.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think from the Hawks' perspective, it's mostly of, like, I don't even ding the front office for this, because, like, on paper, this works. Like, on paper, the Hawks make a lot of sense, right? You've got a dual pick and roll option with Trae Young, with either John Collins or Clint Capella, or really three with Onyeka Okongwu. You've got three options with DeJounte Murray, with John Collins, Clint Capella, and Onyeka Okongwu. You have shooting with Bogdanović. You lost Herter, that hurts, but AJ Griffin has been really good this year. Like, you have all these weapons. On the surface, DeAndre Hunter, 3-and-D wing, all of this stuff on paper makes sense. But the reason I have them bottom tier is because it doesn't work, is like an evidence to me that there is misalignment. There is no explanation for this team being this bad defensively with the talent that it has. Like, all right, you want to say, well, Clint Capella can't switch anymore like he used to be able to. Okay, Clint Capella is still very tall and able to block shots. You want to say, like, well, John Collins is a poor defender. John Collins, I think, is a poor defender now, but he gets better every year. The effort level I see from John Collins consistently is pretty high. There's some gaps there. There are stretches where I'm like, oof, but in general, pretty good. DeAndre Hunter's been hurt, okay. But like DeJounte Murray was known to be a very solid defender. So why is it that this team that has so much going for it, that has so much talent on paper, like Bogdanović comes off the bench for them, why is it that this team is still so, ugh, just very much like, oh, good, they won a game, and they lost a game, like every other game?
I mean, when you think about those basic elements, and I like that you brought this down, I hadn't thought of this before, there are actually some very vague similarities to the Cavs, except that the Cavs work and the Hawks don't. And like, you know, the multiple pick and roll threats, you have kind of like different ways that you can run the pick and roll, and maybe none of your wings are perfect, but at least you have guys. And I would say in some ways, if we're just narrowing the field to the small forward position, I would say the Hawks are better there. But Cleveland, it meshes better. I think also Donovan Mitchell's buy-in on defense has been very important for them. So it's striking. I had never really thought of them as parallel teams, in part because of the disparate outcomes, but I think there is an element of that that is there.
What's your second lowest tier?
I mentioned this before. I called it too much unknown and unsettled. So these are teams that could make a credible argument to be in different places, but I said, I don't know what they are well enough to put them somewhere else. And so I think the perfect team to explain this is the Nets, because I'm still figuring out what in the world this team is, what their timeline is, what they want to do. They were fun to watch. I watched that next Sixers game and was very impressed with the defensive buy-in, Jacques Vaughn. So like, they may end up being, like, by the end of the season, like tier three or tier two for me. Like, it's possible. But I worry a little bit about the offense. I worry a little bit about kind of what they want to do. Like, I get what they want to do defensively, at least for the most part, especially. And Claxton playing with this kind of talent is going to be so much fun for the rest of the year. Can they do enough? Can Cam Thomas and Dinwiddie and those guys kind of get it there? They're a good example of it. Like, the Hornets are just, I don't know. I don't know what in the world to do there. I have the Rockets here, in part just because they're more of an unfinished picture. You could easily argue them tier six. Like, I have no opposition to you having them in the bottom tier. I loved your explanation there. And I'll roll through the other ones quickly. There aren't that many of them. So I said the Nets and the Rockets and the Hornets. The other three are the Spurs, just TBD on talent. The Jazz, I need to evaluate what they are now. I think that that's going to be an interesting question over the rest of the year. And then the Pelicans, I've been dubious on the Ingram-Zion fit. I want to see more of that, but it's just they haven't had their best players available at the same time. And sure. So while I'm skeptical of the fit, they've been really good in some of these iterations, and I think that when they're got, they can just overcome with talent, but I want to see it before I put them into a tier.
Interesting. Well, let's get to the Pelicans in a second. So my fourth tier is I've got the Nets, I've got the Hornets, I've got the Spurs, and then I've got some ones that will probably break your brain a little bit. I got the Bulls.
I'm fine with that.
I've got the Suns, the Clippers, and the Blazers.
The Suns were a really hard team to fit in, and okay, let's talk about the Clippers. I have them a little higher, but I didn't want to put them higher. I thought about putting them here. So I want you to convince me to move them down.
So, you know, the Clippers are in the good times, look like everything is full speed ahead and it works, and look at this talent and all these types of things. In part, one reason that I would, you know, I bump them up to, like, I'm tempted to bump them up higher is the beginning of the year was baffling to me. Truly, truly baffling to me. Like, the first 2 months of the season, the Clippers had the lowest three-point shooting percentage in the league. Okay, you know what? Shooting variance. It's a make-or-miss league. Weird start. Okay. But on top of that, they also weren't taking them. And then, like, over the last 20 games or so, they've gone the other direction, and they're back to being like, oh, high three-point volume, high three-point percentage, which is, like, what they should do. But what's interesting is, like, this was supposed to be, like, the deepest team in the league, and they have all these different options. And those options just haven't worked. Like, they just haven't been able to get an edge on the opponents. Again, they're playing very well as of late. A lot of this is, people will say, well, yeah, when Kawhi plays. Okay, but this is the problem I have, is you needed, one of the reasons that we bought into the Clippers collectively was part of the, or at least for me, like part of the idea was they have so many different iterations and play styles. They have a set identity and they have all these things. And then, oh yeah, also on the side, there's Kawhi, which is kind of how you have to build with Kawhi. It's like, you need a scheme and a system and a design and identity. And then, oh yeah, also we have this guy, because sometimes he's there and sometimes he's not. And when he's there, he doesn't need to be part of a system, and you need to be able to run stuff without him in just random possessions so that he can have like a breather. So like, there's a very complicated balance that you have to strike, and they had done that very effectively. And then this year they didn't. And then, so that was confusing. The other thing I will say is, you know, Reggie Jackson was a Paul George guy. Like, everybody knows that. Like, that was he was a Paul George guy. John Wall, I think there's a little bit of debate on, but my understanding was that he was more of a John Wall or PG guy too. Gone. Kawhi, everyone in the league has known for years that he's wanted a point guard. That's been out there. I reported on that. Again, he's been pushing more for that this season. That's why they wound up getting Eric Gordon, because otherwise they were going to have to give Masai Ujiri too much for Fred VanVleet. So, like, all of these machinations come into play where I don't know how I can ever consider you to be in alignment if I never know what the star player is going to do, act, or want. Like, I don't know any of that with Kawhi. And so there's a little bit of I think, for me, unsteadiness with all of this, combined with the fact that this has not been a great Ty Lue season. Now, I've said this before. I said this about Michael Malone last year. Michael Malone was in a really bad spot with the Nuggets last year. Michael Malone also coached badly. Like, he made bad decisions throughout the year. It was the worst coaching season I've seen from him in his professional career. This year, he's been awesome. Like, you have good years and bad years as a coach. I thought, like, you know, Rick Carlisle, I thought, had a really great start to the first half of the year. Hasn't been as good in the second half of the year. It's been a little bit weird lately. So you have these kind of stretches. But I have a hard time. I cannot look at the Clippers and be like, everybody knows what the deal is. Everybody knows how to play. Everybody is in the same situation. Everybody is locked in on winning a championship. Everybody is engaged. You know what you can count on. And a lot of this just gets back to Kawhi and the unsteadiness. But at least 2 years ago, I could say, look, Kawhi is an unstable element as far as his availability goes. He's not Kyrie unstable. But like, at least the underlying structure I could count on. It's just a little bit more uncertain this season, and that combined with Kawhi has me where I have to put the Clippers down here at this tier.
One stat to point out there, and this is one of the bigger surprises for me with the Clippers, is that Paul George on, Kawhi Leonard off, -1.7 including the glass net rating. Like, there actually aren't really teams in that range this year, but that's roughly where the Lakers are. And it's just like, you have to be better than that. You know, they have, as you said, they have plenty of talent, and you have to be able to construct and execute without an inconsistently available key player. And that is something that the Clippers knew going in, and I thought they'd done it, but they haven't yet. And it's a challenge. I like the point that you brought up about Ty Lue's coaching this year. I agree with it. And the other thing that makes the Clippers thorny, and I'm gonna move them down into my tier four. I'm not gonna go all the way to my tier five, but I'm gonna move them to my tier four, is I don't know how it changes. Like, right. that's something else that is important for alignment is like, you know, it's the idea of how changeable, you know, is this like a big old boat that you have to turn and it takes a week, or is this more like a nimble thing? And generally when teams are young or they're cheap or they have a structure that can make sense, they could do that. The Clippers aren't really any of those things, even though they have an owner who's willing to spend, which is good. And that could help eventually resolve some of that.
Let's do Suns.
Phoenix is hard, and we haven't seen them on the floor. We're not going to see them on the floor for at least until after the All-Star break. We'll have to see. I worry about them defensively. Like, there is a possibility I see them on the floor, and I'm just like, oh, I'm just as scared of you guys on that end as I am the Mavs. Like, there's a possibility. But one of the reasons why I'm more optimistic is I think their overall talent level is better than the Mavericks, and I'm more intrigued by the Durant-Booker fit than I am the Luka-Kyrie fit. Intrigued in a positive way. I mean, there's a lot more to figure out with Kyrie and Luka, and so as a tantalizing element, it's that. But, like, KD and Booker have both spent time off-ball. Booker is I don't think he should do it a lot, but he's a fantastic off-ball player in a way that Kyrie can be when he's activated, but isn't always, and Luka can be when he's activated, but isn't always. But again, that's only a small part of the equation.
I made this argument, and people were upset with it. When I wrote it on the trade, I said, I don't think Durant's ever had talent to augment him like this. And everybody was like, how about the Warriors that were the best team in maybe NBA history in 2017? And I kind of mentioned this with the Clippers. KD is similar in this, in that for me, it was like, no. Like, you had the Warriors, and then you had KD. And so, like, KD would take a breather and go to the bench. And then the Warriors would run Warriors stuff, and they'd win, because the Warriors stuff was awesome. And then KD would come back on, and they would do KD stuff, and they'd win, because KD's awesome. But it wasn't necessarily,
well, I mean, you can even go, I go back to Marcus Thompson called it Novocaine, of, like, the Steph Curry KD pick and roll that Steve Kerr basically never ran, even though it would ruin everything, because that's just, it's not the way the Warriors did things. I think it's a really astute point. And
yeah.
Durant, like, those OKC teams didn't do it. I mean, he carried a lot of what they did well, but that wasn't because they said, this is a KD team, what should a KD team look like? And then that was never a part of the DNA of the Nets. Because, right. and a lot of that blame for the Nets part goes on Durant, because when you pair with Kyrie Irving, it's not a Kevin Durant team, it's a Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving team. That's just the way these things are.
And that's part of the, and that's that, if you have like concerns about the Suns, that's one of them, is that like KD is always, and this goes back to the Thunder days. So the Thunder used to have these terrible late game possessions, and everyone would be like, God, Scott Brooks sucks. Look at these possessions. And then KD left, and the Thunder never ever talk bad about anyone that leaves. Like, that's a institutional profile. Like, it is a characteristic of who they are. But like, if you got folks to just be like, you know, love Kevin, but you know, a lot of that was him. Like, and then you would hear the same thing out of Golden State, and you would hear the same thing out of Brooklyn, which is just like, KD has a lot of confidence in who he is as a player and how he plays, because he's Kevin freaking Durant, and he gets to have that confidence, and it's been wildly successful. But like, this is part of it, is, well, the interesting is to see how the Suns adjust, adapt, and accept the number of possessions that are just going to be like KD being KD. The good news here is I think that the combination of what you mentioned with Booker off ball, Booker's passing, like, Devin's a better passer than Klay Thompson.
Much better. Great,
like, Klay's amazing, much better defender than Devin, but like, Devin's an incredible passer. So you have this thing where you have Chris, who will always take whatever the leveraged opportunity is. If it is like he will run pick and roll with Kevin and force them to switch. And if it's, okay, Chris has got the advantage, Chris is going to attack. Okay, Kevin's got the advantage, Kevin's going to get the ball here. And if they bring help, Chris is going to be like, now Devin's probably open. And if not, I'm going to find the corner shooter. Like, or the lob to Aiden. You know, Chris will never prioritize his game or really any sort of attack. Like, he is very willing to take what he will pick on, whatever your weakness is. Well, like, that's Chris Paul.
It's funny. I think of Chris Paul. I've used the phrase basketball pragmatist with Kevin Durant before. And Chris Paul is that. They just approach it in different ways because they have different strengths and they see the game differently. And like, but right. That, as you're saying, that is what Chris Paul does. Is like, he'll go after it. He's very diligent. He's not going to make silly mistakes. If Chris Paul was defending at the level he was 2 years ago, I would be much more of a believer in the Suns team. I'm skeptical there. And then it's also the question of like, how do you add pieces that fill the gaps they have? And we'll see what they look like in the end. But I mean, those kind of wing guys who can defend well enough, but also shoot, hard to find. You know, that's a part of the reason why they're you generally can't get them as buyout guys.
And why you had to give up two of them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, part of the reason the Nets are so fascinating.
Yeah. And I think the reason I have the Suns here, because like I've just spoken about how much I like this concoction, the short term, like this 4 month stretch, I'm not worried about. For me, it's there's a lot of capacity for drama here with Chris. On some level has to know that they're side-eyeing. The Suns are like, oh yeah, I love Chris, can't believe, like, look what he's done for our culture, also we're gonna need a long-term replacement. Like, that's out there.
Yeah.
Like, they were out there in the market looking for, like, Chris Paul was not off the table in trade talks.
No, I mean, and their interest in Van Vliet reported, I think Shams had that originally. That is notable, not only in the sense of, like, it's hard for the Suns to get him, but you have a point guard.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I heard other names that were pretty shocked. Like, I heard that they called Charlotte about Rozier, not as a replacement, not trading CP3 for Rozier. But when you're taking on a guy that's making 20 mil and you're like, wait, you're not going to pay $53 million for Terry Rozier and Chris Paul. So, like, what are you doing here? And the answer is, like, they're looking for a long term sustainability around Devin. And now it's a long term sustainability around Devin and however long Chris has. The other thing is that this puts a lot of pressure on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre Ayton, obviously already in a pretty awkward situation with him and Monty Williams. That's already awkward.
The core of this Suns team is Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and no one else.
Yeah.
And it's fit in or get in for both Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton, and that is awkward. And DeAndre Ayton's trade, I mean, I think he would have consented to a reasonable trade, but his trade restriction is going to be gone the next time they can make a trade. And the challenge for James Jones, Ishbia, everyone else is not only the identification part. I think the identification part's actually going to be pretty straightforward for them. It's going to be, if it doesn't work, you have to not only move quickly, but make the right choice. Because your window is narrow here. And so, like, knowing what we know right now, obviously, like, Toronto has an extremely challenging offseason because of all the stuff we already talked about. The Suns, unless it all works, do too. Because Kevin Durant, as great as he is, at some point he's not going to be this guy anymore. And so this window might just be 1 or 2 years. And so you get it right or you're not super relevant.
So I had Blazers tier 2, and then you started talking about him. I moved them down to tier 4. I'm going to bump them back up to tier 3.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going to do that is you're right that, like, it hasn't worked, but they still know what they want to do.
That's
like,
true.
Nobody there is like, I'm the guy. Everybody's like, no, it's Dame. And like, you know, their big problem, and honestly, like, the base idea of, hey, we're going to have a huge big man, an athletic wing, and a dynamic two guard with, you know, some athletes is pretty good. Like, that's a pretty, it just so happens that, like you said, it doesn't work. It most notably, like, they couldn't get a deal done to move Nurkic, and that's a shame. It's not that Nurkic is the problem. I've said this over and over and over again. I will keep saying it in the hopes that somebody in the Blazers will hear it and be like, maybe, why should you listen to me? But still, you can't have Damian Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic together in a pick and roll defense. You just can't. Like, you can have Dame with a more switchable big. You can have another more athletic guard with Nurkic. Anytime that team can put Dame and Nurkic in a pick and roll, they're going to lose. You can't do it. Dame can't play drop because he can't get over the screen to help out at all. So you're going to have to give up mid-range looks or, worst case scenario, you know, high off the dribble threes. Nurkic can't play at the level. He gets beat at the edge and he gets beat on switches. There's no way to solve it. But like everything else with the team, I'm like, okay, like, do I think that they're going to give Jeremy Grant, like, from what I understand, the Jeremy Grant extension is like done. Like, he's going to be there. He's part, like, I heard he was untouchable in trade talks.
Yeah, whether it's an extension or a new contract, I think it's going to be a new contract.
I think it's going to be a new deal. But like, it's already been like, that's done. That I think is handshook. At the same time, like, that's okay. You could say, like, is he really worth it? Well, you know, if you're Portland and you're just like, we need a really good piece, Jeremy Grant's a really good piece. So I think that there's alignment there. I think that the coaching has shown it's, you know, Chauncey may not have been awesome this year, but I don't think it's been bad. I've actually liked a lot of what Chauncey's done. I think the formula is there. And so they're in alignment as far as the direction. They just got to, like, knock everything into place so they don't have as much drag against that direction, if you get my drift.
I do. And it's also testament to the greatness of Damian Lillard that they're in a, like, you can argue I had them in the same tier, but obviously different parts of the same tier. There are similar frustrations and flaws with the Blazers and the Wizards in that even the like, as constructed, the best version of this team just isn't that good. Like, that sort of a problem. But A, the Blazers are better, and B, Damian Lillard is miles better. And like, there are ways that you can, there are ways that you can turn the Blazers slightly. Like, you brought up a Nurkic trade. There are a couple other things they could try to do on the perimeter. And like, they're sort of running into, I brought this up years ago, that like, Kevin Huerter is a good basketball player, but was a bad fit with Trae Young just because there's so much that you can't do with them as your backcourt. I think there are elements of that with Lillard and Simons where you're just like, well, crap, what are we going to do here? And that was part of the idea behind signing Gary Payton. That really didn't work out for myriad reasons, but it's something that Cronin, that Billups need to navigate in all of this. Like, I think that Simons is a good basketball player. I think that Lillard is an unbelievable basketball player, but can you build a successful foundation with those two and Nurk?
Yeah. Can I ask you, this is a separate question. If you have a guy like Anthony Simons and you know what he's going to demand in the open market and you know how scorers get paid, and you already have a guy, like, not even if you don't have Dame, like, you just know that Anthony Simons is never going to be Dame. He can be CJ McCollum. He can be any of these top level, like, really Bradley Beal, even, right? But you know that he's never going to be Damian Lillard, and you know he's never going to be a good defender. Before you go down that path, should you just move him and risk, like, how dumb you're going to look if he becomes, like, a four-time All-Star scoring leader, knowing that, like, you've already, like, if you're not going to be able to defend and he's not going to be Dame, are these guys worth it?
We're going to have a bunch of teams in similar places. Jordan Poole, there, I'm sure there's some extenders remorse there. And I think Maxey's better. I mean, Hero is another interesting question with Miami. They were a little bit trapped, but like, you trading them beforehand, if you can get the right offer, yeah, I think you need to be more ready to move early on those sorts of circumstances than late. That said, like, Simons, I think he's worth that money to someone else. So it's not like, oh God, once we drive this off the lot, we're just dead in the water. Like, I don't think it's that circumstance. But even if that works out, you still have to move quickly. Like, that's the problem with it, is you still have that issue, and they don't have, like, the defensive foundation around Simons the way that the Warriors do with Poole and the Heat do with Hero. So it's like, well, you can get this other stuff, and then if they can be the offensive guy that you're dreaming of, then it can all kind of fit together. So I don't think I mostly agree with you. And the other part of it is, if you think that Anthony Simons' defensive limitations are just, and they have a better idea of this than anybody else, are just baked in, you, as much as Lillard is great, you know there are some limitations there too. That increases the urgency, particularly with Lillard's age and just kind of where the team is. So overall, I agree with your concept.
I have a healthy tier three. I have one.
Oh wait,
two, three.
Can we? I don't think we need to discuss them a lot. Is the issue with the Bulls just that mostly that they're not good enough? Because like, I think they're mostly pulling in the same direction. It's just that they're not good enough in that direction.
I think they have too many headwinds. I think, and what I mean by that is the direction last year was like, make the playoffs. Got it done. Good. Got it done. Check mark. Right. But ownership's also like, but don't spend too much. You know, like, it's not like, oh yeah, you can go into whatever. And then also it's like, we want to be in the playoffs and be marketable. You know, I would love to know what the market was for Zach LaVine. Now, I love Zach LaVine, and I actually think that he was underrated. He was overrated and then underrated and then overrated and then underrated. And now he's like, I don't know, probably pretty properly rated. I think I saw Zach LaVine turning into an all-NBA guard before DeMar DeRozan showed up. And it's not that DeMar DeRozan made him bad. It's that DeMar DeRozan has to be DeMar DeRozan. And I don't know that DeMar DeRozan makes Zach LaVine better. I think DeMar DeRozan makes the Bulls better. I think DeMar DeRozan makes everybody else in the Bulls better. I don't know that he makes Zach LaVine better. He doesn't make Zach LaVine into more than he was. He limits a little bit of what Zach can do. So my question is, when we get to these questions of why didn't you move Kobe White? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you try and move Vucevic when you're probably going to lose him in free agency? Why didn't you, you know, they tried to pull a trigger. They got to Brooklyn pretty early when Kyrie demanded a trade and was like, hey, we would be interested in a LaVine swap. And that would have made a lot of sense for both sides. And ultimately, the Nets wanted more draft capital and returning assets than the Bulls were going to be physically able, I think, to offer. I just think that there's too much headwinds with this team of, like, DeMar is going to have to be able to do DeMar stuff. And they don't have, like, a signature young player that's going to raise your ceiling because Lonzo's in his situation. And then, like, there's Zach, who I think is at once, he's at once constrained by this team, and he also limits them and drags them down a little bit. Like, it went from a really great situation for Levine to kind of an unfortunate one for both sides. So, as currently constructed, until I feel like ownership either needs to be like, look, we gotta, like, contend for a title. We have a lot of pieces. Let's sell everything off, be bad for 2 years, get into an awesome situation in a draft, you know, next year, year after. Whatever we got to do, because their 2025 is gone. Like, whatever you got to do to get the pick situation where you need it, do that. Or, you know, they need to get super aggressive and stop trying to half-ass things. And that, to me, is why they're here. It's like, we want to be good, but not too good. And that's a problem.
They also have the problem that I think Arturas is a talented person. He's made some really good moves that are a part of this, even some that I disagreed with that have worked out more to his vision than mine. He still believes in the concept of this team more than I do. And that's always hard, because, like, it's a challenge.
That's the thing I don't know, is, like, I will tell you that there was, when I asked folks, no, I don't think anyone knows Arturas, because he's a very inscrutable man. But when I asked around, not just close to the Nuggets, but just around, about, like, hey, do you think Zach LaVine's an Arturas guy? And, or is there, you know, another way to pose, like, is Arturas a Zach LaVine guy? There was a lot of, like, smirking and kind of, like, sideways looks, and, like, we'll find out. But, like, to me, there was a little bit of, I don't know. I don't know how much he really, I think for him it was, how do you make leaps, and then we'll get of a level and we'll try and parlay that into something better. And then they stalled out. And what I don't know is whether they stalled out because of Lonzo's injury, or because of internal team chemistry, or because of ownership having certain restrictions. Those are the questions that I need answered before we kind of figure out the answer on Arturas. But I will admit that it's not looking great.
Plenty of other tiers to discuss with Matt Moore, but first a message from betonline.ag. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season, everything from pro and college basketball to UFC and MMA and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup information, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. So head to the website today or use your mobile device and use the promo code CLNS50 to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Again, make sure to use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards at betonline.ag, where the game starts.
Can I tell you my tier three?
Sure. I will tell you, I've moved the Bulls down. I actually moved them all the way to my tier six, because my tier five doesn't really count. It's a separate thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. Tier three for me is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams.
Okay.
After I move the Blazers up. Sixers, Bucks, Pacers, Pistons, Mavericks, Warriors, and Blazers.
I'm most interested in the Bucks, because I actually have them tier one.
Yeah. So here's the thing with the Bucks is, the vibes were really bad there for 2 months, and I talked about it and I wrote about it, and, like, there was a lot of conversation in league circles about how bad it was. Now, I talked to people that know the team very well, and one of the prevailing sentiments across the board from multiple folks was, well, they're not playing well right now. If they play better basketball, the vibes will be better. And lo and behold, Chris comes back and they're bombing threes, and they've won 11 straight, and the vibes are much better. I think that there's some internal tension. I think there's some internal tension between with Giannis and what he's being asked to do on a nightly basis. I think it's starting to wear on him after 4 years. You know, he's no longer the spring chicken he was in 2019 with the first MVP. He's done a lot of the barrel down into triple coverage, get hammered drives over the years, a lot of deep playoff runs. And he's getting he's getting to the point where he's like, it shouldn't be this hard every single night. I think the Chris Middleton contract situation is a big thing hanging above the organization. Now, I don't think Chris is going to be a problem the way some guys will. I think Chris is like, no, let's win a championship. Like, that, we'll work that out when we get there. But right now, we're going to win a championship. Jrue Holiday, I know I can count on. Most of the young guys I know I can count on. Getting Jay Crowder, I think, was a good move for addressing what they needed, which is they needed another wing. That Ibaka trade was bizarre and will always be bizarre to me, regardless of the assets that they were able to bring in. At the same time, like, the Bucks can absolutely win the title. I would say that three teams in this can actually win it. I think the Sixers, the Warriors, and the Bucks can all win the title. Bucks, you can make the argument for the Mavericks. I'm not there, but you can make the argument. The Bucks can win the title, but I do think that the combination of The defense is legit. They fixed a lot of the three-point problems. Like, I'm all in on the defense. You even see it last night in that Celtics game. And the Celtics shot great. Not surprised. Bench units do this. They get up for games like that. But the Bucks will have a hard time in the playoffs in certain games keeping pace, right? If you're going to play this style and you're going to be built around Giannis as much, you either got to make up for – you're going to have efficiency on the perimeter, and it's either going to have to be crack shooters that you know you can trust that can also create some for them. Like, they have Drew and they have Chris and they have, I guess, Ingles to a certain degree. That's about it. They're low on shot creation and they're low on, like, deadly shooting. And, you know, Grayson, I don't think you can play in a playoff series. We saw that last year. So these are all the reasons why I just – the Bucks are aligned on winning a championship, but it's not like they don't have nothing but the wind at their backs. There's a little bit of resistance from various angles.
The analogy I was thinking of as you were talking is like, I don't know why I'm thinking football more than basketball, is those teams that have a really great defense and a shaky quarterback. And so if the defense is holding, it all works together well enough. But if they give up a special teams touchdown or the defense is a little shaky that day, maybe when one of their corners has a, you know, has an ankle issue, then it's like, well, crap, we're down 14 nothing at halftime. How are we going to get those touchdowns? And I think of the Bucks that way. I mean, like, even the year they won the championship, their offense was extremely shaky. But I really do like the Jake Crowder addition. There's a distinct chance that he doesn't provide much. They also needed somebody who does what he does, and he's a credible guy at executing that. Defends, you know, can hopefully hit enough shots, and you know that makes some of the Giannis at center lineups more viable. So I still have them tier one, but I respect that argument. I'm gonna lay out my, so you kind of, I think I kind of split out a group that you did a little bit differently. So the way I did it was these are all teams that make me a little shaky, and I split it out this way. Tier four was key parts. Like, I don't love the fit of the key parts, but some of the other stuff is good. And then tier three is like the key parts fit together, but then the rest can be a little bit shaky. And so we've talked about a lot of these teams already, so I'll breeze through most of them. So tier four, that's the key parts are shaky and the other parts are yes. The ones we've discussed, the Blazers, the Hawks, and then the two we haven't are the Knicks and the Thunder. Ooh. And the Thunder, this is something that I've been fixating on a little bit, which is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a monster. He is fantastic. I'm intrigued by Josh Giddey. I've never been the biggest Giddey fan, but there's a reason, even if some of it is just shooting luck, that OKC's offense has been way better when Gilgeous-Alexander plays without Giddey than with him. And the reason why is because you want the ball in your best player's hand a whole lot, and Giddey, to me, isn't good enough at the things he's good at, to, especially when you combine it like his overall shot creation rather than just passing. Like, he's an unbelievable passer. And so put the ball in your superstar's hand more often. But the good thing about OKC is they're defending super duper well in sustainable ways. The buy-in, Dagdal, like that, all that stuff is really good. And Giddey is talented enough that I'm not saying you should trade it. They're good enough to do that. The question is long term. You might need to make that clarification. And the other possibility for Giddey, and it's interesting because we brought him up earlier in absentia, is Lonzo Ball, another very talented passer who got good enough at the other parts of his game that he worked alongside star players. And that, I think, is if Giddey can't get that juice on Ball, that's what he's going to have to do.
Okay, I have Thunder tier one.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'll make the argument for the Thunder tier one. There is no team in the NBA that I have more confidence in organizational direction.
Sure.
And that is
coach, GM, all that.
Owner. Like, yeah. Owner, GM, coach, assistant coaches, training staff, ball boys, the G League, all business, sales, all media, all the way on down. There's a Thunder way of doing business, and it works. And they're basically like, you're going to do these things or you're not going to be here. And that's fine, but you're not going to be here. And they are very careful in not creating those situations where they have to get rid of guys because of that. Like, they select guys that they can have confidence in their ability to fit who they are. On a basketball level, okay, before it was like, well, who's going to be, like, they don't have a guy. Well, they have a guy. It's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Guy's berserk this season. Like, the way that other players talk about him is very illuminative of how much of a problem he's going to be in the league over the next couple of years. Come on, baby, most improved, 3,600 to 1, or plus 3,600, let's go. 36 to 1. Please, 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 please. My thing has been like, God, they need shooting. They just don't have any offense. And that's just not the case this year. Like, I don't even know how this is possible. They're ninth in three-point percentage. Like, Who? How? And it's like Jalen Williams is at 46% at 1.5 per game. Isaiah Joe, I looked at this up this morning. Oh. Minimum 40 games played, minimum 20 minutes a night. Isaiah Joe has the best net rating in the league. What? Like for bench players. What?
Isaiah 45. Joe also taking 11 three-pointers per 36 minutes. And he's, yeah. I think of him and Muscala is basically like the reason that this team is shooting that well is that, and the other guys just don't shoot that often.
How about this? Aaron Wiggins is at 41% in 45 games played. Like, Basley was at 40%. You know, they got Muscala's gone. Kendrick Williams, 39%.
I mean, Poku's at 38.
Poku's at 38. You know, it's crazy. And this is the reason this kind of like really has come up to me is because we're recording this on Wednesday and I have the over on the Thunder tonight. And the big reason I have the over on the Thunder is I made the mistake of taking an under in a Thunder home game on a bet stream I did and was like, oh, it's, you know, the Thunder defense, blah, 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 blah. And then it was like, it roasted over. It was easy over. And they're actually like a huge over team at home. And they also
Houston is unbelievably bad on defense.
Unbelievably bad on defense. Yeah, I'm on the over tonight. But like part of this too is like they play extremely fast and they shoot well and they're super organized and they know what they're doing and they have Shea and they have Chet coming in next year and they'll probably get a decent, probably not great, but a decent pick next year that they'll do something probably productive with. And like, you know, for me, it's just like what the stuff that they need to add are probably all things that I trust Sam Presti to be able to find rather quickly if he chooses to do so.
Yeah, I'm going to move them up from tier four to tier two on a similar but kind of different idea, which is
okay.
It doesn't have to be Giddey. It could be Chet. It could be someone else.
Yeah,
like that's the part of it that I think I was and in your the organizational stuff you cared more, you factored in more than I did. You're completely right on it though, unambiguously.
The Pistons I have higher than you do, just from I feel like the Pistons, even though like yeah, like the shooting is a problem, and I tend to, this is a oversight by me, I don't value shooting as much as I need to. After just talking about how much I thought OKC needed it, but at least with the Pistons, I feel like they've done well in their organizational priorities. Like I like the fact that they didn't make any moves at the deadline. Everyone's like, why did you not move these veterans? And I loved what I heard from people about the case, which was just like, why would they need to move anybody? They're losing at the rate they need to get the pick. Like they're going to be in the conversation. They're going to have a very good chance at Wemby or Scoot. Despite all this,
the question for them at the deadline is there are three paths. One was trade the guys now, trade the guys later, or keep the guys. And the difference between now and later is actually not about whether you want to keeping them long term. Certainly that puts a thumb on the scale if you feel that way, but it's also what is the return difference. And I don't think there's a significant chance the teams just weren't offering it. Remember, we didn't see a first round pick change hands in the last 11 hours of the trade deadline. And we did see one before that, not only with the Kyrie and KD trades, but the Lakers giving it up. But that was for a kind of a different package. And so I think the offers will be there for Bojan and Burks. Plus, you get the rest of this year to just talk about it and think about it. And you could also just keep those dudes. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think they're in a really good spot from an organizational perspective. You know, like, here's the thing. I don't watch them and go, like, Casey's a problem. I just don't go, like, wow, Casey's really getting the most out of them, which is okay. Because if you got too much out of them, you'd be in the Thunder situation where it was like, hey, if they had a worse coach, maybe the Thunder would be in line to get Wemby to put next to Chet, but they're here. So I just kind of like largely feel like this, like the Pistons are fine. They're missing a lot of pieces. They're going to need to get right on a lot of things. Cade's going to have to get a lot better coming off of injury. But at least like I don't look at them and go, the center stuff I think is fair from a like where have you look at all where have you put all your assets, especially relative to the market. The thing I would say on that, though, I will point this out. When so many people I talked to before the deadline were like, yeah, we're looking for a backup center. Everyone's looking for a backup center. When Jakob Poeltl goes for the price that he did to the Toronto Raptors, having centers if you're in a rebuilding state is pretty good because you're able to be like, we could capitalize on a luxury, like we have more of this thing that no one else has. Now if they don't do anything with it, that's a mistake, but at least it provides them an opportunity to do what they need to do, which is like asset accumulation and buying low in spots. Well, you know, if they can do more of the, hey, we'll take a veteran that you want to get rid of in exchange for an asset, like they could use those veterans. And I also like, I just like the direction of this year where it's like, yeah, Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren are going going to make a lot of mistakes, but they're also going to be awesome a lot of the time.
I wanted to ask you about that just very quickly. Where are you on Ivy right now?
I forget which one I was watching. I watched him a few days ago, and I actually was pretty impressed with what he was able to bring to the table. My big thing is what I kind of just said. I love that he's just able to go through this entire stretch where it's like he was probably further behind than folks expected. He was supposed to be very out the box ready. He was probably behind that, but I think it's been great that he just gets these reps. Like he gets these reps, he gets to figure out exactly how teams are going to defend him, what the gaps in his team in his game are, and if he pays attention to those things and he takes the time in the offseason to correct them, he's going to have a monster year next season next to Cade. If he doesn't, you know, we're going to go Dennis Smith Jr. route. Like that's going to be the problem. But I think he's way more talented than Dennis Smith Jr. And I actually like I'm still very high, I think, on Ivy. Where are you at?
I'm not all the way there in terms of him as like a half court creator, but I like the energy he plays with in transition. I like that he's gotten the chance to make mistakes. And the biggest place that I actually want to see what this offseason does for him is defensively, because there is a threshold that you need to meet to be a viable defensive player, whether you're the star or not star. And like, I mean, I want to give Shai Gilgeous-Alexander an immense amount of credit for doing that. Donovan Mitchell's been better this year too. And whether you're a support player or you're a star, you still have to do that. And so if Ivy can get kind of all the pieces of his game up to be like, okay, I can buy him as a complimentary player with potential to be more than that, I'll be on board. And I like some of the physical tools, and I'm still shaky on his jumper, which is like that's yeah. it's just such a swing skill for basically any guard who it's not definitive one way or the other. I'll just breeze through a couple of the other teams. So this is the second part of that group. I call it key parts, yes, rest, eh. And this is where I ended up with the Suns. I said purely conceptually because we have to see. Yeah. The Warriors, their main guys make sense together, but a lot of the other stuff gets wonky. Not only the two timeline stuff, but just like some of the roster construction, that they don't really run a different offense when Steph Curry's off the floor, and none of it makes sense in that circumstance. I also have the Heat here. I love Jimmy and Bam, and I think they have a lot of good players around it. It's so weird that they've been so bad shooting in the first part of the year. I think that will improve. I think I'll feel better about them. And then this is where I ended up putting the Lakers, for we already discussed them. And then this is where I ended up putting the Kings and the Wolves, because the Kings, I love the synergy of Sabonis and Fox. I mean, we saw that really well in that Mavericks game. Fox is playing at the best level of his career. Sabonis, like, he elevates the offense, and the defense is meh, but the defense is going to be. But I think if you're going to make a Fox Sabonis team and have enough shooting at like one or two spots, I would love to see like maybe a little bit of counter programming a little bit than they've had so far, because they've done super well and I believe in their offense. I'm just wondering where they go from here.
Yeah, that's the question, right? Is like, hey, congratulations on breaking the streak. You guys are probably going to make the postseason. Now what? That's a very big part of it. It's interesting that our I think if I were to break out my tier two into two tiers, we would be pretty on line with a lot of these. My tier two is Knicks, Heat, Magic, Wolves, Jazz, Pelicans, notably, Grizzlies, and the Sacramento Kings. I have the Warriors a tier lower. So with the Warriors, you know, to your point, like the starters work well. Here's the issue is, again, my stuff combines the on-court stuff with the off-court stuff. And so a lot of this is like, I have a big position on the Warriors under, which is going to hit.
Yes.
And there were a lot of reasons for it. Numbers indicated that teams with an over 50 win total tend to go under the last 10 years. That's going to be, again, true this season. Not the Celtics, unfortunately, for my bankroll. They had an overseas trip to an Asian country. I'm sorry, I believe they were Asia.
Yes.
Bucks were Middle East. Teams that go overseas for Asia preseasons tend to go under because it disrupts your training camp. And it's like a very simple thing that I learned from the Warriors, and it's proven to be a very profitable strategy. But then you also, like, it compounded where it got worse. You had the preseason Draymond fight with Jordan, and you have, like, all of these various things. It just feels like they're, you know, I talked about how much headwind. They're going into a lot of wind right now. And some of that is, like, Draymond's probably got to be pretty frustrated with, like, it's clear he's frustrated with the defensive attention. He's got to be frustrated with the extensions that were handed out and where the team has kind of left him. there's all of these kind of factors. And then you get the Steph injuries on top of it, which they're not. One of the things that is becoming apparent is, as much as I credit Steve Kerr's system for unlocking what Steph Curry became and unlocking what the Warriors became, you can't do it without him. It's part and parcel. Like, Steph without Steve Kerr's system was a phenomenal player, but wasn't the world breaker that he became. And Steve Kerr's system without specifically Steph Curry is just good. And that differential, I think, is pretty massive. I don't know what their future to me looks very much like. Everybody has to kind of be looking over their shoulder about what's going to happen to them. And that's not a good situation. Ownership, obviously, always kind of looking for the next big advantage, et cetera, the two timelines thing. And then just very simply in this, which is, you know, if we're going to say the on-court stuff, at some level, I'm just going to look at you and go like, okay, but you got to win games on the road too. And
you have to consistently beat teams when you have an advantage, whether that is because you're better than them or because they have star players out. Like, there was a conversation in the media room. We were talking about the when LeBron was out for the Lakers game, and I'm like, oh no, I think they're going to lose. And then they did, because it was just they often play to the level of their opposition. And the Warriors actually did that a fair amount during their best years too, but it didn't matter because they were so superior to everyone else that they could handle it.
Yeah, and like their win profile is a mess. Like, it's a mess. Looking at it right now, like, in this season, after winning the title, which is one of the whole thing everyone keeps kind of holding on to, Warriors 16-11 versus teams under 500. As a comparison point, the Timberwolves have 13 of those losses. You don't want to be even with a Minnesota Timberwolves team that's been without Karl Anthony Towns for basically the entire season in that category. Not when the Pelicans, the Clippers, the Suns, the Kings, the Grizzlies, and the Nuggets all have less than 10 so far. So that's a big gap there. So it's a great point that they don't win at the level that they need to. Let me make the argument for the Pelicans.
Sure.
Who have gotten tier two. I feel like everybody's bought in. You know, the young guys. The young guys are on a young enough trajectory and have enough years ahead of them that they don't have to worry about their contracts yet. So there's no real tension there. Herb Jones has played a little bit better as of late. They know who they are when they're healthy, like you mentioned. I think one thing in your favor, like a reason this can't be a tier one, is like I don't know where Brandon Ingram fits with that identity. I just don't. Like, their best version this season was Zion with all of the different options, like Zion and CJ, or Zion and Jose, or Zion and Nance, or Zion. Like, all of these combinations worked, except when we didn't see enough of Brandon Ingram, and now we've kind of seen, like, the Brandon Ingram Pelicans, which is basically last year's squad, and it hasn't been as good, and there's a lot of concerns about Ingram separately because of the injury and stuff like that, but I also just think that there's, like, one kind of... I try and check myself of, like, hey, this is, like, a thing that I see and worry about. Like, am I crazy? And again, this is not people with the Pelicans. The Pelicans may be like, no, it's fine. But like, people, smart people in the league, I ask about this. I ask, like, about the Ingram thing, and they're just like, I just don't know how much Ingram and Zion are on the same page, and how much there's a, you know, Brandon wants to be the guy, and that's what he's always been told he's going to be. And he was the guy for 2 years while Zion was out. And now he has to be the other guy, and they want to both be the guy, and that's not going to work. So I think there's a little bit of tail there, but at the same time, like, when they're rolling, they're so impressive. And I think that they hit a real lull there in January with all the injuries and the issues and all the problems. But I think they're starting to come out of it. I still think Willie Green will figure out enough answers. I like this Pelicans team and the trajectory that they have long term.
They're so talented. It wouldn't surprise me if they just figured out. I think Willie Green's done a nice job coaching them. So there are plenty of reasons to go in all these directions. And it's also bizarre that even the playoffs might not be definitive on them, depending on how everything goes. It's just an open question. Briefly, my tier two, I called it most of the way there, where they're pulling in the same direction, and this is more just kind of, you and I looked at this in a little bit different ways. They just need to add more talent or do something else. And so, like, for me, the Orlando Magic are there. They've actually been very successful when Wagner, Paolo Banchero, and Wendell Carter have been available. Basically, to me, any good offensive guard will get them to the place that they need to go, and they have the resources to do that, whether it's cap space, draft picks, whatever. It needs to happen. And I feel better about Jamal Mosley now than I did a year ago, also because we have a lot more information. This is where I have the Cavs. I've been impressed overall with what they've done, what JB Bickerstaff has done. I still am a little, still a little bit questionable about how they're going to be against good teams. It might just be where, you know, I learn it in the playoffs one way or the other. I have the Pacers here. I agree with you that the first half was a lot better than what we've seen of the second half so far. But with Haliburton missing extended time and just kind of the, some of the weirdness there, like, I'm hoping that gets ironed out. I also really like the Haliburton-Turner fit. And Turner's going to be on the trade market forever, but at least I like the fit there. And I want to see more Haliburton-Mathurin, but I generally like that. And credit to Carlisle, it's been a little different over the last couple weeks. This team has run a ton. And it was a question you and I are talked about a lot 2 years ago, was the Dallas Mavericks just doing nothing in transition. And the question was, is this a Luka thing? Is this a Carlisle thing? Is it both of them pulling in the same direction? And at, whether it was them pulling in the same direction then, I give Carlisle credit that their only way for this Suns, for this Pacers team to succeed was to run, and they're running.
Yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit for actually playing to the strengths of the roster. I want to see where the Pacers end up, because there was a lot of momentum about them in preseason, and everyone loves Hallie, and he was phenomenal this season, obviously, and they made a good push, but now, like, they're really starting to spin. And I want to see whether they can stabilize or whether they lose a lot of momentum, and it's like, maybe this team isn't as good as we thought. I want to see where they're at. I thought it was interesting that you have the Knicks lower from, I don't mind it, like, because it's like, how are they going to get great? To me, I like the direction of the Knicks in that they haven't, the fact that they offloaded contracts to sign Jalen, who was an expensive ad, but he's been just what they needed. A lot of this is just going to be, I guess I'll put it this way. I'm going to love their direction if they're willing to make the hard choices.
and that's a part of why I have them lower, is that the Knicks are in this place where you can put together like a lot of different combinations of three key pieces that they have, and it works. It's just you have to choose which other one to excise. Like, that's kind of the way it works. And like, I've been a big Quentin Grimes fan. He's a complimentary player, but he's a good complimentary player. Brunson's been great for them. So it's then, but if it's those guys plus a non-shooting center plus Barrett and Randall, like, I think you eventually, maybe immediately-ish, need to figure out one of those two, because you can actually, they could do well with a lower usage player at one of those two spots and just basically take the advantages that come from a more basic player that doesn't need the ball as much. And that's not to say that Julius Randle's a bad basketball player. He has been better at times, but he's also been worse at times. But this is something Nate and I, and we've done a couple of Knicks games for the strategy stream, is that you get a lot of your play style from your power forward, and some of this is just being lower on Julius Randle. There are players like that all around the league. But like, if you do, let's say the idea is Brunson, Grimes, Barrett, or Hart, low usage floor spacing four, and they're five. Like, it makes life easier on everyone else in these very specific ways. And Randall deserves credit for his shooting. I mean, the Knicks are, I believe they're sixth or seventh on offense right now. So, like, maybe my criticism is just outdated. Like, I acknowledge that possibility. And then the other thing with them is, it's like, can they really defend at a super high level against good competition? I'm not sure.
Yeah, their defense has been so inconsistent. It's crazy how much it waxes and wanes. For me, it's like, okay, you stuck with Randall. He got booed last year. He's rehabbed his value. He bought back into you. He didn't, like, just check out the season, right? He's like, Randall wants to compete. He played well this season. You rehabbed his value. Find him a good spot that gets you decent return, that can upgrade you in multiple spots. To me, the big thing here is just Barrett, who, like, it's letting go of these ideas of guys that were going to be your franchise savior is tough.
But so tough. Ask the Warriors.
Like, pick and roll with, like, Jalen Brunson, Mitchell Robinson, and then, like, some shooting on the wings makes a lot of sense, unless it's RJ Barrett. Like, that's where it gets tough. So I think that they, if they can make those tough decisions, they'll be in a really good spot. My tier one is four teams.
Okay.
It's, I mentioned the Thunder. I have the Cavaliers one.
Sure. Because that's fine.
For me, it's like, they had a vision and they executed it. Yeah. It was like, oh, hey, we've got these two really dynamic big men who are awesome at what they do. And we have just going to overwhelm teams with size, length, and athleticism. We're going to defend at a really high level. We have Darius Garland, who could do a lot. What if we got, like, another high level playmaker? Oh, we had in Donovan Mitchell, and he recommitted on defense. Like, it all kind of works together. And their bench is really good. Chetty Osmond's really good off the the bench. So, you know, Kevin Love slid out, but I think they have, I like Dean Wade. They have some real upside, I think, with that team. I think, everything for me is probability. It's not about like, ooh, this team is going to do X. It's like, what are the chances? I love the Cavaliers as an Eastern Conference dark horse. I love them. If they can get in the right bracket, it's funny. The Sixers need to stay out of Boston's bracket no matter what. And the Cavaliers need to stay out of the Sixers bracket no matter what. And so, like, I think if things were to go right and the Cavs are able to stay healthy, which is a big thing, I actually think that they're going to be a huge thorn in the side, and they're going to be have some great betting opportunities for people as a dog for them to go further or to have series more competitive than I think the market will recognize. I think that they're aligned. I think that they've done a really good – I have to give Kobe Altman a ton of credit for whether it was just like things came together or he saw the master plan and it came together, whatever. It worked, and he's done really good to augment it. I love how he's managed the roster on the fringes, like Ricky Rubio, you know, bringing in Robin Lopez. The vibes are immaculate for that team. That team has the best vibes of any squad in the league. They have a lot of fun playing together. They're in a really fantastic spot. Taking a risk on Mitchell, knowing that like New York was where he obviously wanted to be, and then having it be like him be like, hell yeah, I'm so excited to be here. What a win to like sell a guy on what you're building, have guys around that he wants to play with. They win a ton of games. When they're healthy, they're awesome. Love the Cavaliers. Celtics, this is pretty obvious. Just like they have a style. All their guys play the style. All their guys play hard. There's never an effort issue with that team. They maximize what they do. I don't, just because I personally don't love or believe the most in such a perimeter-oriented, isolation-heavy offense that's not pick-and-roll derived, doesn't mean that it can't be successful. It is. Obviously, it was the number one team in the Eastern Conference.
One Celtic stat quickly.
Yeah.
The second best cleaning the glass net rating for a team facing the other top 10 teams in point differential is actually the Mavericks at +3.1. The Celtics are at +9.
I know.
And part of that is that they don't have to face the Boston Celtics, which is useful because the Boston Celtics are very good. But they have done really well, and that includes, you know, they lost to the Bucks last night, but they still played, you know, still played well, and that was a road game and all that type of stuff.
19-7 versus teams below 500, 22-10, which is excellent, versus teams 500 and above. They have 23 wins by double digits. That's by far, especially not the most in the league, actually. The Cleveland Cavaliers have the most, which is why they're number one, by the way, in SRS. But like the Celtics, they win their division games. They're 8-1 in their division games, which I value a lot. They're 23-7 at home, which is great. There's just no way to ding the Boston Celtics. And the final team is the Denver Nuggets, who Calvin Booth, when he took over, wanted to take a more ruthless and aggressive approach. And what they've done is they've targeted veterans that know the deal, and everybody's locked in on winning a championship. Like they don't talk about it because they know how much work there is to be done. And they know how fragile these things can be. Like, there's a very real sense of like, yeah, well, we thought we were going to win the title 2 years ago, and then Jamal tore his ACL. And there's like that hovers over everything. But Malone coaches much better from a position of strength than he does when he's in the weeds. He gets too uptight.
It's kind of the opposite of Doc Rivers.
Yes.
Where Doc Rivers is great when there's weirdness and teams shorthanded and everything else like that. But when things are going well, it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. And Malone is the opposite, where it's like, if you only give him so many options, he's going to lean on what he can trust. And sometimes it's not the best. But they've been phenomenal, and he has chilled out because they have given him the opportunity to chill out. And that puts them in a really good place, because every player I've talked to says this is the most detail oriented staff in the league. They pay a lot of attention to the minor details. A player also said that Malone, he laughed and said, I think Malone wants to win the games more than the players do. And he's hyper competitive, and that can rub guys wrong, but it's working right now. Jokic is what makes the team go. Jokic's attitude and how he makes everybody better is great. That's what was funny about the Bones situation, is the vibes were so awesome except for with Bones. And that was one of the reasons why he got moved for such a low price. But this team is definitely in a really good spot as far as an organizational approach goes. Everybody's pointing in the right direction. Nuggets, Celtics, Cavs, and Thunder are my top four.
I will say I think the Nuggets are the most in alignment, as the Celtics are a really good team, but especially with some of the tension potentially with Jaylen Brown and just like understanding the focal, having a singular focal point actually makes this a lot easier. And so you could argue, and I would, that it's a good problem for the Celtics to have, but it is still different. Whereas Denver, it all kind of goes in together. The one team we haven't discussed, so the only disagreement really there for me is, well, you brought up the Thunder, is I have Memphis tier one, you have them tier two. I know you know this team very well. I'm interested in that.
Sorry, broke up there.
The Grizzlies.
I've got them tier two. So my thing is, I think that they're all pulling in the same direction. I'm just not always sure it's the right one. I think the organization has stretched this out very impressively, but you're starting to see the Raptors are another example of this. When you're like, well, we have such faith and confidence in our development staff and how good we've done, we'll find guys and bring them up to that level. And then you don't. And then you got Malachi Flynn and you got Zaire Williams, who's back in the G League. That's concerning. I didn't like the Zaire trade on the surface. I just didn't love the pick. Like, I didn't like moving up to get Zaire. Now, look, Zaire can turn into a phenomenal player. That's, careers are long. All these things can stretch. I change minds on guys all the time.
Well, it's also letting Melton and Kyle Anderson go.
Yeah. And Chris Vernon talks about this on the Ringer podcast about how, like, the Grizzlies kind of need an adult in the room. And especially with Danny Green now gone, like, you're missing that. Dylan Brooks, I don't think that there was an ability to move him either in the preseason or offseason, rather, or during the season. I don't think there was an opportunity, but it's just becoming very apparent if it's like, you're going to need to go a different. And I think they tried to get OG. I think they made as much of an effort as the Pelicans, and the price was just too high for anyone to stomach. But their mouth is way far ahead of their performance. They haven't gotten there. Now, the brashness benefits them. It gives them confidence. It gives them attitude. It's how they play. I get it. But this team also is just dreadful in half court. When the game slows down, they go to pieces. And most of the playoffs is about that. They had a run last year where they get upset by the Wolves if the Wolves don't piss down their legs three times in a series. And you say, like, well, they took the Warriors to six. Yeah, because of the crazy-ass Game 5 in Memphis, which no one could really understand. And then on top of it, like, Game 1 was like a coin flip game. They played really well. The Warriors are also a really good matchup for them because they want to play a little bit in chaos. Like, if the Grizzlies face the Mavericks or the Nuggets, who play in constrained, slow order, it's going to be very tough for them. And, like, the Grizzlies' direction is championship, but their talent keeps pressing them to a level where they have to play a little bit above where they're ready. And then at the same time, the organization is like, well, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves or make a key mistake, which is to their credit. But this is the challenge of being that front office. It's like, you got to find the move. Like, you got to find the thing that locks everything into place while the rest of the guys develop where they get there. Next year after, you get that piece, Ja learns a little bit better about how to shoot off the pick and roll with a pull-up jumper, which he added and then kind of abandoned this season. Desmond continues his great development, and Jaren, who I think has made the biggest strides this season, you will have a contender. But I think right now, one of the problems is, like, the Grizzlies are facing extremely high expectations, an insane amount of pressure because of how they put themselves in the spotlight, and I just don't know that they're ready. So that's why I have them tier two.
I wonder about how the Grizzlies are going to handle disappointment this year in the playoffs, if that's what comes, because it's always really hard. It is generally a step in the road. There are very few organizations that get there, and Memphis was able to kind of, because of Ja's injury, they were able to kind of see this, like, we're giving them a tough fight, we were able to do it. And this year they have the expectations, hopefully they come into the postseason healthy. And there are two directions that can go. Either that can galvanize you and get you there, whether that's making the move that you need to make or the players taking steps forward, or that is what knocks everything apart.
Yeah.
And I really don't know which way that's going to go. And honestly, it's typically not on the court. Like, that's not when we see these circumstances happen. And I think it's going to happen with Memphis. I still think they have a credible chance to make it out of the West. But that, you get hit in the mouth, you get knocked down, you don't meet your own expectations in a series. Does that make you individually, collectively want to be better? Does that make you want to send out these three guys that you think failed you? Like, it's so hard.
Yeah, I also think maybe, though, like, I think failure is probably the best thing for them. Not from a, they need to take their medicine, but from a, I really admire how patient the front office was. like the front office was like, we have this awesome team. Yeah, we're going to trade Jonas Valanciunas for Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe in a pick. Yeah, we're going to take this. We're going to move up and take this wing with a pick. And, you know, we're not going to move Dylan Brooks and we're not going to do this. And, oh, yeah, like we're going to move DeAnthony Melton. And, yeah, we're going to move Kyle Anderson. And, like, they're still the number two team in the Western Conference. Do I wish as a Grizzlies person that they still had Kyle Anderson? Yes, I do. Do I wish they still had DeAnthony Melton? Yes, I do. Has Tyus been awesome? Yeah, Tyus is always going to be great. Tyus is Tyus. Like, keeping those guys would have been great, but they have so much potential. Like, they have a lot still out in front of them. And now I think what's going to be interesting is, like, see how far you can go and then react when you don't get there. Because last year it really was like they took another step forward. No reason to think that they would have gotten past where they got to. You know, most people thought they were going to be, you know, maybe a playoff team. And they were one of the top seeds in the Western Conference and had a real, like, a couple things go differently. And that Warriors series is like a game seven in Memphis, where things are much dicier.
And that team eventually won the championship, which also allows you to think of it differently once you get to June.
So I think this could be good for them, not in terms of like them. I don't think they'll ever learn their medicine, or at least not until they're much, much older. And that's good. Like, they need to keep some of that attitude, but understand how tough it is and then really come to terms with like where they got to get better. And that's Ja, and that's Jaren, and that's Desmond, and that's coaching, and that's the front office. And I have a lot of faith in Taylor Jenkins. I think Taylor Jenkins understands all that, but they're going to need to figure out a lot of that. The first time that they're in a series and it's like, oh, we can't just run these guys out. We don't have home court, and we can't just run these guys off the floor with transition. It's going to get dicey. So
how does everything make me more excited for the West playoffs? Every single thing, every conversation, every game I watch, I'm just like, this is going to be madness.
It's funny with the East being favored too at the Bucks. They're the East is the favorites, and I get it because of the strength of those teams. And you're going to be like, wow, can you get through the West and then beat Boston? I get it. But boy, there's some really great teams in the West. Like, the Suns are going to be great. You know, I have them lower in this ranking because of all the drama that is possible there. But they're going to be great. And the Grizzlies are still going to be tough as hell, and they have stepped up, and they always, like, they rise to the, they will meet you at the moment. Like, they're not going to, if they fail, it's going to be because of things that they can't get to. They just can't do, but they're going to hit you as hard as they possibly can. And I just, I don't, if they're the number one team by a margin, I really don't think people understand how good Denver is. I just don't think that there's an acknowledgement, or I think it's like, oh yeah, that's cute. Okay. Oh, sure. Joker. And I'm just like, guys, when they hit you in waves, like, I've seen this team at home break squads. They just, and teams look helpless, and they're gonna have home court. It's like, yeah, they can do that at home. Can they do it on the road? Well, they're gonna be home for the playoffs,
and they're gonna be home for every game seven.
Yeah,
at least until the finals.
Yeah, so it's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be a great playoffs.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. That was a great conversation.
Loved it. Had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Matt Moore for taking the time to come on. You can read his work at the Action Network. You can listen to him on Locked On NBA, Locked On Nuggets. You can also check him out on the BetStream, which is a fun thing that they do as well. You can also, if somehow you don't already, you can follow him on Twitter at HP Basketball. Love having Matt on. I really do appreciate our conversations and the give and take, and we are able to come at things from a different perspective, but really, like, I find myself learning and gaining so much from these. And like, one of the things Matt talks about a lot is how well a team performs against the best 10 and the worst 10, and like, I've started incorporating that even more into my analysis since he brought it to my attention, and now it's just kind of part of it for me, and I appreciate that. If you want to support the show, there are a lot of different things you can do. You can subscribe, download every episode. That is particularly useful for Real GM Radio because it's never going to come out on a specific day of the week. You can't get in a habit with it. So whatever podcast player you use, Spotify, Apple, whatever, you can check it out there. It'll just pop into your player whenever it comes in. You can also help other people find the show. Leaving a rating and review and the podcast player for choosing is good there. Social media, word of mouth, however you want to do it. Really do appreciate it. But the single most important thing for this show and any other that has them is to check out our sponsors for this episode. That is betonline.ag. Use the CLNS50 promo code to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, and to tell them that you came from us so they continue advertising on this fair podcast. You can also check out my other work, Dunked On and Dunked On Prime. We're taking a little bit of a break right now, but we did a ton of great work over the last, you know, week plus with the trade deadline and everything else. And then, I mean, Seth had a great piece in the Dunked On Prime mailer that came out on Wednesday. Then Dan's still doing great work. And then, of course, Nate with John Hollinger. There's a lot of really good stuff there. Nate and I are also taking a little bit of a break from The NBA strategy stream will be back basically when the NBA is back for Pacers Magic. I presumably will talk more about that the next time I record for Real GM Radio. And then written work at The Athletic. I did a team-by-team breakdown of where things are looking for the 23 offseason already. And then I have more pieces in the works in various stages of production. So you can keep an eye out for that. If you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DanielLarueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get it to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is an absolute promise. I'll try to get back to you, but I admit I'm not the greatest on that, but I try. And that is all for now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.